Customers are rushing to your store. Do you have a point of sale system you can trust, or is it a real POS? You need Shopify for retail. Shopify POS is your command center for your retail store. From accepting payments to managing inventory, Shopify has everything you need to sell in person. With Shopify, you get a powerhouse selling partner that effortlessly unites your in-person and online sales into the one source of truth. Track every sale across your business in one place and know exactly what's in stock. Connect with customers in line and online. Shopify helps you drive store traffic with plug-and-play tools built for marketing campaigns from TikTok to Instagram and beyond. Get hardware that fits your business. Take payments by smartphone, transform your tablet into a point-of-sale system, or use Shopify's POS Go mobile device for a battle-tested solution. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Do retail right with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/theathletic, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/theathletic to take your retail business to the next level today. shopify.com/theathletic.
Looking for the best place to buy tickets for any of your favorite teams or sporting events? We've got the spot. Our partner, StubHub, has been the leading ticket marketplace in the world for over 20 years, providing a 100% guarantee with every order. From a worldwide selection of live events, the widest choice of tickets, and industry-leading partnerships, StubHub has what you need to purchase with confidence. StubHub, an official partner of The Athletic.
How's working from home been going for you? Remarkably Remote from GoToMeeting will help you succeed in today's new normal. In just 3 minutes or less, we'll share simple but helpful tips to keep you on track. From managing your motivation, workload, and relationships, to hosting and attending virtual events that keep you connected with your clients and colleagues. So check out Remarkably Remote on your favorite podcasting platform, or head to GoToMeeting.com/tips.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to The Athletic Support, your podcast on the Montreal Canadiens. Do you remember hockey? I do. I'm Marc-Antoine Godin. I'm with Arpin Basu and Sean Gordon, both of them, each in their own house, still confined. Hello, guys.
Hey, Marc-Antoine. Hey, Arpin.
Hello, gentlemen.
So, I would like to ask you if there's anything new this week for you guys.
Yeah, no. I shaved this week.
Wow. Okay.
I had a shave, so that was good. Mm-hmm. I was proud of myself. That's otherwise, nope, nothing new.
That's good. A truck came by and installed what I suspect is a 5G antenna in front of my house. So if I'm
get ready
if
for protesters.
If I'm struck down by something, you'll know why.
Yeah, that's good. Well, I've got a bit of news for everybody, and it's that we're Friday. So today on the podcast, we're going to. Well, first of all, we're going to discuss Max Domi was in a conference call yesterday that Arpin attended to. Can we say attend when it's a phone call? Anyway, you listened on that phone call.
Part.
And you took part into it. Some interesting stuff came out of it because Max Domi, I think it's something that intuitively all of us had felt for quite a while, but there seems to be a disconnect between the hope of seeing as a longtime Montreal Canadian, judging by the fact that he's a skilled player, made 72 points, barely a year ago, and the fact that he's more likely than not destined to be a winger in let's say at the least in the medium term with the Canadiens. So this situation, Arpin, is meant to come to a head at some point.
Yeah, I mean. I don't think I would have written what I wrote this morning, on The Athletic, which you can go check out, right now. Or maybe after you're done listening to the podcast, but it's not the first time Max Domi has spoken about, about how much he enjoys playing center, but it was the first time I got the real impression he was campaigning to remain at center. There was a different vibe to what he was saying. It was really this long thought out response to a question that he's been asked many times before. It's not as if it's the first time he was asked about his preference, and he's always answered that he prefers playing at center, but it's never quite been as detailed and almost passionate as it was on this conference call. And obviously, you know, depending on whether or not this season resumes, he is a restricted free agent at the end of this season, whenever that is. He has arbitration rights, and he's in a bit of a complicated situation. And I think that the position he plays, and he seems acutely aware of it, that the position he plays is going to be a question when it comes to his long-term viability on this team. So I just found it interesting to hear him speak so passionately about a position that he's only played for 2 years, basically. And so although he did play it for a short while in Arizona, which Marc-Antoine, you were good to point out to me that he conveniently forgot over the course of that answer, but I'm not one to print 450-word quotes very often, but I thought it was appropriate in this case because Max Domi's not one to give 450-word answers, and he did in this case. And I thought that was notable.
It's interesting, Marpin, that you raised the word campaign. I really think that's what it is. It's a lobbying effort. I think that he also understands probably contractually that centermen, generally speaking, do a little better in terms of term and money. There are conflicting numbers on that depending on where you're at in your career. But I also found it interesting that there's also an internal contradiction in what he's saying, because it's at the same time he's talking about wanting to play center and being able to carry the puck through the middle of the ice and all that stuff. And then he goes and starts talking about how all guys are interchangeable on lines and things. And like, I think there's a status thing involved here as well. I think it seems to me that what looks like a dilemma for the coaching staff, which is either put him on the wing where he's going to be going up and down the boards, or keep him in the middle where defensively, I'm very sorry, that ain't it. Like, he's not the guy for that. And faceoffs, he's gotten better at, to his immense credit. But it's like, I don't understand why it needs to be a binary equation. Why can't he have the puck in the middle of the ice as a winger? What is the barrier there? And I think there are elements to all of this that they should be able to reconcile, but very clearly there's an element in his mind of there's a status question, there's a role question, and there's a kind of like, we're kind of quibbling over job descriptions rather than the job itself, it seems to me. And I do find that very interesting. And I think that when you look at where he's at in his career, I mean, is there another player in the National Hockey League who is going to be more affected in terms of his contract outlook than Max Domi? I don't know. Maybe if we thought about it long enough, we could probably find a bunch of other names that are in similar situations. But Vit de même, I don't know if there's any other player in the league, right, who came off a fantastic year the previous year, an okay year this year, who plays a key role, who's at an RFA stage with the arbitration rights, and all of a sudden, I mean, you know, the contract projections for him were probably somewhere north of $6.5 million a year on a long-term deal, but given what he brings, that's out the window now. And like, is there a long-term deal to be had here? I don't even know if there is. And so I think this is all part of the positioning for that argument, I would suggest.
What's interesting is that since he's arbitration eligible, you cannot expect an arbitrator to take into account the financial situation of the league and the fact that it's been dealing with a pandemic, that the cap is remains flat or could even go down, who knows. But these are not factors that an arbitrator should consider. You should just look at, you know, at the pure numbers, the comparables. And in that sense, I mean, the fact that Domi did not have like exactly a stellar season this year, I don't think that he would get a $7 million contract. We made the exercise halfway into the season, Arpin and I, just actually during the holidays. And, he looked, his closest comparables were guys like Teuvo Teravainen, who, in his situation ended up with a contract that, if I'm not mistaken, just slightly under 6 million, something like 575 or something. And also, obviously, the AAV would be comparable to, would be impacted by the length of the contract. And as you're asking, Sean, are the Canadians really that interested in getting into a long-term deal with this guy? Or would they say, well, let's audition him for a year? He's 2 years away from free agency. And giving him a contract that would walk him to free agency, a two-year deal, might be something that he likes, but the Canadians would be at a position where they might lose the asset for nothing after those 2 years, and that's probably not the ideal management of said asset.
No, and so just on the Teuvo Teravainen contract, yeah, he was a guy that we'd kind of identified as a comparable for him, and he signed a five-year deal at 5.4 per year. In January of last year. So he signed well before he had to. The Hurricanes obviously identified him and like what he brings. The comparison is apt because he's also someone who played center for a while and then moved to the wing and did not affect his playmaking ability, did not affect any of his effectiveness at all, really, as a player. But it's interesting. The one thing that I didn't get into in my piece, I'd actually like to share it here. It goes back to something that you said, Sean, is that my assumption as well, once I finished listening to this lobbying campaign by Max Domi, was that he must believe that he is in a better position to negotiate a better contract, as a centerman. And I think logic would dictate that centers probably get paid better than wingers. I reached out to Dom Lucician to see, and I just asked him, I was like, if you were trying to figure out what the salary is of the average centerman in the NHL versus the average winger in the NHL, how would you go about it? So he pointed me to Harmon Dial, our boy genius out in Vancouver, who is just pumping out really excellent work.
He really is a boy genius. Yes.
Yeah, he is. He is flat out. And so he said, Harmon recently, reached out to him for his database of players, to do a story, this was in late April, on the best, value contracts in the NHL, which was actually an amazing read, an amazing collection of research, and had capsules on every single team. And actually, if you have time, go check it out. It's very interesting. Although the Montreal one, was not all that surprising, obviously, with Brendan Gallagher being here, So I reached out to Harmon. I was like, would you happen to have, some sort of database with every player's salary sortable by position? He's like, why? Yes, I do. As a matter of fact. And so he sends me this Excel file that has not every player, it has roughly half the league, sortable by all different sort of statistics, goals, primary assists, secondary assists, but also cap hit and GSVA, which is Dom's, kind of catch-all war-like metric for basically trying to judge value of players. And so you have this document, and while looking through it, so what the document allowed me to determine was centers don't necessarily get paid better than wingers. Among this subset of players, wingers actually had a slightly higher average salary. There were a few more centers who made a lot of money than there were wingers, but really there was no really discernible difference there, which was surprising to me, because the whole reason I reached out was actually to establish the difference, like to be like, look, this is why Max Domi feels this way, because he wants to get paid like a centerman when wingers get shortchanged. But that doesn't turn out to be true. But what was interesting is that you can sort this document by GSVA. And so when you look at it, and the table is right next to the salary table. So it's an incredible tool for finding comparables. And one of the players that was very close to Domi's GSVA, Domi was somewhere in the low ones, but he was, oh, here it is. He was at 1.18. Or 1.19, sorry. A player, and we're not going to get into GSVA. You can look it up online if you don't know. Someone who is very close to him was Alex Radulov at 1.21, who struck it rich as a winger, but another one was Andrei Burakovsky, and which got me curious. Burakovsky's at 1.23. No, wow. But here's Burakovsky's contract history, and this is what got me thinking, is that Burakovsky has never had a season like Max Domi had last year. Let's just get that out of the way right off the bat. So like in that sense, they're not all that comparable, but this season at least, by this one metric, which is a very sophisticated and complex metric, but it's a one metric nonetheless, they had similar impacts on the ice. But when you look at his contract history, so Burakovsky comes out of his entry-level deal, signs a two-year deal worth $3 million a year with the Capitals, and then signs a one-year deal at $3.25 million for this season with the Avalanche. And I just think that under the circumstances, you know, if the Canadiens could avoid, like, is that example not the best way for both Domi and the Canadiens to move forward here? Just because it just seems to me like most of the free agents right now, whether they're restricted or other or unrestricted, are probably going to want to get into short-term deals, because I don't think they're going to want to lock in at a dollar figure that is related to this current financial climate that we're all kind of trying to figure out and trying to see what it actually winds up being. So that deal to me, a slight raise, 1 year, and a kind of bet on yourself deal is what I think is probably the most likely scenario here for both Domi and the Canadiens while avoiding arbitration. And that way Domi, you know, it's entirely possible he stays at center this season, or next season, I should say, and then shows what he can do as a centerman. And then maybe he could, you know, kind of turn that into a longer term, more lucrative deal, a year from now.
Yeah, it's interesting. I think that I'm not sure about the position though. I think that one of the arguments you were pointing out in your piece was the fact that there's Danos there, likely to stay. Suzuki, who has proven to be a very interesting option at center. Plus, you'll have to factor in Kotkaniemi, who might come back as the third line center. So if you want to keep Domi at center, well, you'll have to move one of those three to the wing or trade one of the three. So that's why, in my perception, no matter the length of the contract, Domi remains the odd man out in that scenario. As for signing a 1 year deal, I'm totally with you. The current landscape makes it so that it's much easier to just punt the issue by a year and say, well, let's wait until the current climate as clarified as, and it's the same for guys that are potential UFAs. I mean, I was chatting with Yaroslav Halak yesterday, and he was telling me, listen, I was so happy to sign for one more year in Boston, just because I can, there's some security involved. There's so much uncertainty around the league and around, you know, in all sorts of ways, that just making sure that you keep going what you've been doing, there's a sense of normality there. So maybe that the Canadiens and Domi will go that route, but I'm not sure that it solves the problems.
So here's why they don't sign him to a 1 year deal, I think. Because there is no value in doing that from the club's perspective, given the logjam of contract decisions that they're going to need to make in 2021. I think you try and get at least 2 years, if only because you want to lock in a number that is going to create a certain level of certainty going into 21-22, which is really that's the crunch year in terms of cap, right? You don't want to leave yourself in a position where all of a sudden Max Domi goes back out and puts up a 105-point season next year or whatever it is, right? Let's say he only puts up 75 points. The price goes up. And I think also when you look at reading the entrails of what it is that the player himself is saying, when he's saying stuff like, I love it here, I want to be here, I want to play here a long time, etc., like, yeah, that's all boilerplate stuff. Guys say that stuff, except that I think in Domi's case, he actually does mean it. And I don't think that he is necessarily going to be inclined, like, I think in a perfect world, he would sign for 8 years at the highest number he can get, That's not happening, I don't think, in the current climate. But I don't know. I think the arrows point to a 2 or 3 year deal at I think a little bit more money. I think look, he Domi was making a little bit more money than Teravainen at the same stage in their careers, right? Teravainen signs his contract immediately after his big year, with the cap going up and all that sort of stuff. Like I don't know. I think he ends up being somewhere in the fours, maybe the high fours for a couple of years. And then maybe we revisit. But here's the thing, right? If you're looking at the makeup of this team in 2 years' time and you're considering, for example, that you're going to need to re-sign Tatar or trade him, you've got Drouin, who is on a longer term deal and has that cost certainty. I mean, who is the asset that's going to be the likeliest to net you something in return among those three guys? Well, I think if you do a deal with Domi that locks him in for a couple or 3 years at a palatable number, I think he becomes a very attractive trade piece in addition to being the guy that you can move around the lineup. And so, like, I think it's really interesting the way that he framed all of that in the conversation yesterday. And I do think that the contract thing to me is like, that is partly this, that's got to be one of sort of the overarching subtext of the discussion. And then there's sort of like his position within the team and him trying to lay claim to the idea of being a centerman. But honestly, as time goes on and I look at it, look, I think Nick Suzuki is a top six centerman in the National Hockey League. And if Jesperi Kotkaniemi can establish himself as a top six centerman in the National Hockey League, which on talent he should be able to do, then I think I'm with you guys. I think Domi is probably one of the people that they have to look at moving over the next little while. And I think you're hamstringing yourself in that discussion if you're only signing him for 1 year.
Well, correct me, he's 25. He turned 25 in March. So if you sign into a 1 year deal, he's still RFA. So there is value in that in the sense that he remains under team control, and any team that acquires him would then have the option of signing him to a long-term deal. And it wouldn't be, you're not bringing him straight to UFA status is what I'm saying. So there is, whereas if you sign him for 2 or 3 years, you are taking him straight to UFA status. So there's a difference there that, I think is important. I think he'd actually, personally, I think he'd have more value on a 1 year deal, than he would on a deal that drives him straight to UFA without giving the acquiring team an opportunity to buy some of those UFA years, should they so desire. But I think your point is fair as well. But here's the thing, the rub here, and what I think is important, and Sean, you made allusion, you know, you referred to it before, is that his desire to stay in Montreal is sincere. He does truly enjoy playing here, and there is a value to that for the Canadiens, and it can't be ignored that when a guy wants to play in Montreal and is willing to sign on and stay, and he's an effective, very talented, with a player who brings offensive, you know, a dynamic offensive element to a team that's lacking that, and who has seen what the landscape in Montreal has to offer and has decided that he likes it, that does have to go into the equation somewhat, because, you know, not everyone feels that way. And so, which is what makes the whole thing about his role and the center, and I think, Sean, you said it really well before, we're arguing about a job description more so than a job, but it's true. It's a label that he seems to want. He seems to want to be known as a centerman from now on. And it's odd, you know, which is why, like, in a way, the one way that I think maybe it could work is that if you tell Max, if you say that, you know, when you're putting the lines on the board, you put Nick Suzuki at right wing and you put Max Domi at center. But for all intents and purposes, Nick Suzuki is the center on the line. But just for the sake of his whatever he needs to feel like a centerman, just write it on the board. You know, it's kind of like, you know, it's, I don't know, I guess it's I guess it's a way of like disguising your broccoli to get your kids to eat it or something. And it's just right on the board. You put Domi at center and Suzuki at right wing. But essentially, as soon as the puck is dropped, Suzuki becomes a center and Domi becomes a wing. And that's the one solution out of this whole thing that keeps Max Domi happy and keeps the Canadians happy as well.
It's the coaching equivalent of melted cheese harp, and I love it. I think that's great.
Yeah, exactly.
I actually think that it would probably work better. I think Suzuki might not be the guy, because I think Suzuki also likes to carry the puck in the center of the ice. You need to have a situation where the winger is the guy who handles, right? A la Patrick Kane. And I mean, I think it would actually probably work better with Kotkaniemi to some degree, right? I don't know. I think, but it is an intriguing possibility. You put him on the board and say, okay, yeah, Max, congratulations. You're the center. Way you go. And, you know, carry the puck. We want you to be the handler on the line. We want you to be the guy who's got the puck on a stick in the neutral zone and for zone entries and so forth. Yeah, I mean, I think it could work. The question is it going to work to the satisfaction of the player? He's a pretty smart guy.
Right? Yeah, no, he is, absolutely.
And understands the ways of the world. And I think if he's putting down this marker in the way that he's doing it, I mean, look, he's a grown up. He'll do what's best for the team. I don't think there's any question about that. But if you want to get the most that you're going to get out of Max Domi, you know, I think probably you want him to feel good about the role that he's playing. And very clearly, this is kind of where they're at.
Isn't it ironic though that you have a guy who just put up 72 points and you're trying to figure out where does he fit in all the, you know, in the Canadiens lineup? It shouldn't be like that. I mean, he was the first scorer on that team a year ago. And, now we're scratching our heads figuring out where he could be used. It's unusual for a team that's not exactly like an offensive powerhouse.
I mean, it is unusual, but the fact is also that, you know, I mean, where because of this whole position debate that is seemingly really becoming a Montreal Canadiens thing. I had a commenter on Twitter today mention how he's never seen an organization struggle so much to find the positions for their forwards, and he's totally right. I mean, it's insane how many debates we've had.
It's a Galchenyuk,
Drouin, Galchenyuk, just in the last few years. So, but in any case, it's the real situation here is that the Canadiens have other holes that need filling. They are actually a decent, for all the, you know, the flack we give them about not having finishing talent, not having game-breaking talent, they are a decent offensive team. They're not a bad offensive team. When you look at all sorts of other sort of, you know, measures of that and scoring chance generation and zone time and what have you, there's an obvious hole to fill on defense. And the question Sean asked earlier applies. Which of the somewhat redundant players do you have to monetize in order to fill a hole and get a top four left shooting defenseman to bridge the gap between now and the next wave of players coming up? So that to me seems obvious that, you know, Max Domi is an incredible player, but it seems to me that he is that guy who has enough value as a talented player that other teams would be interested in having him who needs some offense and who maybe have a surplus on defense.
I want to just jog back real quick to something that you mentioned because it really did capture my imagination. So Galchenyuk, Drouin, Domi. The unifying thread there is terrific offensive players who are played in positions where they haven't necessarily always played, right? Domi probably the most adept all around at playing at a position. But what's the unifying thread there? The unifying thread is that they had flaws in their games as centers that the Canadians simply weren't prepared to live with. And those flaws are defensive. And I think that that's just, you can't expect a player to get good at that. I don't think you can expect him to improve, but I don't think you can expect him to be good if he wasn't kind of inclined toward it in the first place. And that's really the issue. The issue is it's a question of probably, it's like they're overly optimistic about where they can bring these guys. And I do think when you come back to what you were just saying, Arpin, about monetizing, like Yeah, you have to have a very serious evaluation of who's worth what in the current context. And I think that really has to inform your next move.
Yeah, that's right. And the I think that in the current environment, among the Canadians, the players that the Canadians could consider moving, he's one of the guys that could fetch you the most. I mean, he's certainly, at this point, he probably has a higher value than Drouin. Even though at their peak potential, Drouin would probably end up being the better player. But right now, I think that a team would probably feel more comfortable going after Domi. We could argue the same maybe with Tatari, if only for a reason of age. I mean, for a guy that, mm-hmm. that just turned 25, who can skate like the wind, who had a 72-point season under his belt, and can play both the wing and center, those are very interesting tools to work with, and that make him an attractive guy for a bunch of teams that don't necessarily have a lot of strength down the middle, or certain teams that simply have aging centers. I mean, you look at a team like Minnesota, for example, who've been having Mikko Koivu there in the middle, Eric Staal. Those are older centermen, and you don't have much to that's ready to replace them in a prominent role. So it seems to me like a potential destination if the Canadians were to decide to move Domi.
The other thing is he doesn't miss any games. He doesn't miss any games either, which I think is something that in the current context matters.
Yeah, and you know, obviously the Minnesota connection has long been the most logical one. They do have a surplus of defensemen. You know, Jonas Brodin is an excellent defenseman who they seemingly are willing to trade and would fit in perfectly on the Canadiens. So it just seems like a perfect fit. Well, you know, it seems like the Max Domi to Minnesota thing has been a thing for a long time, even though it probably hasn't been that long. It just feels like it under the current circumstances. So, but the other thing the other thing I wonder about Max Domi, and this is kind of my segue here, but, is that we've never seen him play in the playoffs. And I've always seen him as a guy who would thrive in a playoff environment. He seems to have those intangible elements to his game, the agitating, the after the whistle stuff that kind of wears on teams, in a playoff series, when you're facing it night after night after night after night. A guy like Max Domi, who's as good as Max Domi is, doing the things that Max Domi does, could lead to some fireworks and could lead to getting, you know, other teams off their games. Now, the segue part of it is that the Canadians might suddenly be a playoff team. If, you know, if our Pierre Lebrun has been reporting and many other people have been reporting that the league is looking closely at a 24 team playoff tournament, maybe a best of three for the last team to get in, which would be Montreal, who are 24th in the standings. I just wanted to get you guys' thoughts, on what this would mean for the Canadians and do they even want this?
Yeah, well, you know what? It's been so long since Marc Bergevin has been saying that once you're in the playoffs, anything can happen. Well, that would be the perfect opportunity to prove it that it's true. Even though the Canadians are an inferior team to pretty much all of those 24 teams that would participate, at least from a standings viewpoint, probably their group of players is not that weaker than other teams. And, you know, as Pierre Lebrun pointed out in one of his pieces this week, a team like Pittsburgh, who would likely face the Canadians in a 24-team format, could easily, understandably, be concerned of just facing Carey Price, run into a hot Carey Price on a certain weekend, and all of a sudden, in a best-of-five series, be ousted by the Canadians just because they ran into a hot goalie. So that all of a sudden, you know, we all take for granted that they would not be up to par and not ready to compete with those other teams. But, you know, when everybody's been idle for so long, who knows what team's going to react the best to the long inactivity.
And like, I find that argument interesting. Like the whole, oh, you know, carry price can upend the entire season by playing really hot. So have these guys watched Carey Price play this year? I mean, listen, he's a good goalie, but he's not 2014-15 Carey Price. This Montreal Canadiens team is still the Montreal Canadiens that they are. Expanding the playoff format, I could see that teams want to maximize their chances in the playoffs. Fair enough. But look, like, if you can't beat the Canadiens, in a 3 out of 5 or whatever it ends up being, 2 out of 3, I'm very sorry, but, you were not ready to go on a deep playoff run. I don't care if you're Pittsburgh. I don't care if you're, it could be Tampa. It doesn't matter from that standpoint. I think that if you are going to, cut short the season in such a way that you are going to end up having to choose your playoff entrance on the basis of points percentage, then I think the fairest way of doing it and not penalizing the teams that would have been in the hunt with 11 extra games or 10 extra games or however many there were left, the way you don't penalize those teams is by, yes, expanding the format in such a way as to have teams that ordinarily wouldn't qualify. And I think that from the Canadiens' perspective, look, I would rather have the 6% chance at Alexis Lafrenière, to be honest. But I can understand that that's probably not what Bergevin is thinking or Jeff Molson. I mean, if you can have playoffs, no matter what format, no matter how you get there, it's the playoffs that are the thing. It's not like no one's going to remember the circumstances under which the playoff spot was won. And if they remember it, they're not going to care. So I don't know. I don't have a problem with it. I think that would be an interesting way to.
Something tells me we would remember probably the fairest way. The circumstances.
Yeah, I know. But here's where I think there's a compromise that could be reached though. Because to me, you know, what Sean just mentioned about having the 6% shot at Lafrenière, I don't think that necessarily has to be a separate thing from like what they could do is hold a mini play-in tournament. And the teams that lose in the play-in tournament, or the teams that don't ultimately make the playoffs, could then be put back into the lottery. It's an easy fix for me. I mean, basically, if the concern is that a team, you know, the concern when and seemingly still, that the league is the reason why they want to change the lottery rules is because if they're holding a draft before the resumption of the season, they don't want a team to win the lottery and also go on to win the Stanley Cup in some sort of expanded playoff format. But to me, if you're going to do a 2014 playoff, then A, you cannot have the draft in June. You cannot do it before the playoffs are held. And B, you just take the losers of those best of three series or whatever format they figure out for teams to play themselves into the playoffs and then put them in the lottery and then run the lottery like they always did. And then everyone's happy. It's just the only people who wouldn't be happy are the people in the league office who seemingly want to generate a whole bunch of buzz by holding a draft in June with all these players that most people have never heard of and that most people probably won't watch because there will be no trades.
Yeah. No, for sure. But I wonder if the team internally has a certain evaluation of its own players, and with enough clarity to say, oh, you know what? We'd be better off with a high draft pick rather than taking the chance in the playoffs. It's tricky and probably, you know, there's Marc Bergevin, there's a bunch of guys that are his assistants or advisors or whatnot. They probably don't all share the same point of view. Some of them might say, you know what? It's true that anything can happen and we have the same shot as pretty much everybody in there because don't tell me that we're that much worse than this team and that team. But on the other hand, the most conducive way for the Canadiens to be a better organization down the road is probably to take into account the fact that they had a terrible season and say, we're going to go after a top 10 pick and who knows, hopefully optimize our chances if we can have enough balls in the lottery to have a top 3 pick maybe. So if they choose to go that way. Personally, I think just for, if I was in management, I would go with the draft pick before the attempt in playoffs.
I would too. And you know what? Like the doomsday scenario is, to my way of thinking, the 2014 playoff, Canadians upset somebody, to play their way into the main playoff, upset somebody in the first round, and they end up again in like with the 23rd pick, right? And take themselves out of contention from having a top 10. And yeah, I do think that it is very important for the Canadians to have a top 10 pick this year, I think, in the great scheme of things. But it's also important for the Canadians to have the top 10 pick in a context where they can also leverage their assets at the draft table. And that means with trade. So like, if you're in a situation where you have to pick one or the other, and I actually quite like your compromise, Art, but I think that is probably, the argument that will be made, that like, I think you find yourself in a situation where having like nothing is going to be especially satisfying, but I don't think if they're going to go to a 2014 thing, I'd be very surprised if they had the draft before then. And I think, you know what? What's the worst that can happen? Okay, maybe you lose a few draft slots, but yeah, I mean, I don't know. I think the people in the organization probably are more eager to have a postseason to talk about, if only just to turn the heat from 11 down to about 8, right? From a rolling boil to a nice simmer.
Now, here's the issue with that is that I agree. There are people in the organization who recognize that they need that top 10 pick more than they need a couple of playoff rounds. Probably not on the business and marketing side, but on the hockey side, I think this is something that's very clear to a lot of people. And here's the danger is that the scenarios, like the Canadians would be coming in with a fully rested Carey Price, like someone who has been, you know, working out on his own, sure, but has been staying off the ice, is fresh, is ready to rock, and could conceivably go on a ridiculous heater and get the Canadians into the second or third or whatever round. You know, I mean, it's not outside the realm of possibility that could happen. And that is the possibility that if I were in Canadians management would scare the hell out of me, is that we have this guy, we have this goalie, we've invested so much in him, and he's never played with this much rest in his life. Who knows if that makes him like superhuman and he goes on this crazy run and we wind up in the scenario that you just described, Sean, with a pick in the 20s, no Stanley Cup to show for it, you know, a few, no even gate receipts to show for it, because they would be played in some other city in front of an empty rink, and all you have to show for it really tangibly is dropping, you know, 15 or 16 spots in the first round. And not only that, but even in the second round and third, every subsequent round. So it's, you know, it's to me, I would just fight this notion if I were the Canadians. I mean, they have limited things that they could do, and if they had to pick a battle, the one I would pick if I were the Canadians, as opposed to fighting the 2014 playoff, I would fight tooth and nail to make sure the draft is held after the playoffs. Mm-hmm. That would be my priority. But this is the possibility that exists for the Canadians, perhaps more so than many other teams, like just because of the context of Carey and his potential and the wide gaps that exist when he's like tired and not playing to his potential, and how well he plays when he has it at his potential, and what kind of impact that can have in a playoff series. The thought of short playoff series to get into another playoff would scare the hell out of me if I were the Canadians, because they might win. and that'd be a bad thing.
Well, it depends. I mean, at some point, it may be a bad thing if it was just to win one round. But if they were to go on a run, don't forget that you mentioned earlier the fact that Max Domi, we've never seen him in the playoffs. Well, the Canadians as a whole is not a team that has a lot of playoff experience. So you go through the lineup. There are many guys that have very, very limited playoff experience. And at some point, albeit those are not ideal circumstances, but at some point you want those players to have a taste of the playoffs, of what it's like and the pressure that comes with it. It's meaningful experience. I'm not saying that it's it's the mother of all silver linings in that it offsets every argument that you've put before. It doesn't, but it's, I think it's still something to put into balance, the fact that this team at some point will need to have playoff experience, and so that every player understands the sort of extra gear that it needs to look for, you know, when push comes to shove.
Yeah, that's a fair point. That is a fair point. I guess I would counter that with, to the extent that I don't know how much they would learn about these play. It is good to have, for them to have this experience of playing, you know, playing in a playoff style environment. But I think we would all concede that whatever form the playoffs take will not provide a proper test of what it's actually like to play under the pressure of the playoffs under normal circumstances. Like that's, so there is, but there is a certain, there's a competition element to it where, you know, the rhythm of the playoffs, playing every second day, playing the same team over and over again, learning how to deal with matchups, learning how to get away from players who are checking you, maybe just those little dynamics, of playoff hockey that are very, very different from regular season hockey. I agree with you 100%. They would have great value in a lot of the team learning how to play under those circumstances. You talk about Danault, Domi, Lekkonen, Byron. There's all sorts of important players who have not experienced that. But again, that experience would be mitigated by the fact that it's not an actual typical playoff atmosphere. And I think, you know, playing in a building like Montreal during the playoffs is different than playing in a building, in an empty building in Toronto in August. it's quite clear. But I think your point has some merit, though, for sure. There are things to be learned if they're able to get into a best of seven situation somehow by playing over their head for a week or so.
So I still think that this has the potential to be the most chaotic playoff ever for a bunch of different reasons. The first of which, you never get to the playoffs with an entirely healthy team, right? And part of playing in the playoffs and overcoming the playoffs is the physical grind and having to find reserves to get yourself through it, having already played 82 games. And so I think the fact that you're not going to be playing in an arena with a ton of fans, the fact that you're going to be playing all these teams that may not have been playing great when the season was paused, but guess what? You know, Mikko Rantanen is back to 100% health. Nathan MacKinnon is back to 100% health. Go down the list, go through the league. I don't know. Is there a value to it? Sure, there's a value to it. Is it going to be a real playoff? I don't think it is. Although I will say this. I've been rewatching Deadwood, guys, and which is maybe the sweariest television show in history. And I think one of the great things is that with no fans in the stadium, I think the audio feed from an NHL playoff game has the potential to be very Deadwood-esque. And I, for one, am very much here for it. I think that would be great. Yes. If there was a way, like, I will pay extra to be able to listen to that.
Oh, absolutely.
But absolutely, yeah, I don't know. I feel like it would be a playoff in name only. And so I'm not sold on the idea that you gain a ton of experience from it. You do. But how much, I think, is really the question, and I'm not sure it's that much.
There's one thing, maybe a detail that might escape me before, but when they discuss 24-team format, do they only put then seven teams like in the lottery, or they factor in other teams that might be among the 24 that would end up having some balls in the lottery no matter what?
Well, that's what's unknown right now, and yeah. So they're trying to work that out. The most logical way to do it is what I described earlier, is that the 24 team playoff is not actually a 24 team playoff. There are, say, how would it work? It would be, yeah, so there would be eight teams essentially playing to get into the playoffs before the playoffs actually start. Like, it's, you know, the NCAA tournament has play-in games that technically count as tournament games, but they're not really tournament games. They're kind of outside the bracket in a way, and they play in to be the 16th seed to get slaughtered in the first round by
like
the top
baseball
seed in whatever region. Yeah. And so, yeah, like baseball, exactly. Except, so, I don't think there's much appetite for a one-game play-in in hockey, but if they did, say, a best of three say it would be, like the 12th team would play against, the 8th team. Does that make sense? No. Yeah, the 12th team would play against the 9th team and the 10th team would play against the 11th team. And then those teams would get in. That doesn't seem to make sense though. Anyhow, but it's a way to create a field of 16 that's fair. Cause basically like the Winnipeg Jets and the Minnesota Wilds of the world and these teams that were just on the outside, they need to come up with a mechanism that's fair to them. And so they're looking at a 20 team playoff and they're looking at a 24 team playoff. But something does need to be addressed there because there's definitely, if they are going to have a playoff, for the Winnipeg Jets to lose by 0.001, on points percentage, would be criminally unfair. So yeah, they need to come up with some sort of mechanism to address that. And the Canadians might get to slide in to some sort of tournament, as a result.
So Arpin, just real quick, I think the way they would do it from the conference is they would give the top four teams a bye and then it would be team five versus 12. 6 versus 7,
That makes sense, yeah.
And then I think one of the proposals that I've heard float around, I don't know, I don't want to ascribe it to great authority, but one of the suggestions that I had sort of stumbled across at one point in my conversations with hockey folks is that the 7 teams that would be excluded from the 2014 playoff would each have a shot at the number one pick, and that any team that loses, that goes into the playoffs and loses out in that first round and participates in the draft, would not be eligible for the lottery for the top pick, essentially. That's kind of how they would do it. So your bonbon for being excluded from the playoffs is that you will have slightly higher odds of getting the first pick overall.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah, interesting. Well, you know, they haven't decided, obviously, so we'll...
No. This is a matter of considerable debate, and I think there are, honestly, I feel badly even talking about it because I just can't decide I can't determine what's real and what isn't at this point. Like, there's a lot of loose talk from a lot of people about what the best way of doing this is.
Yeah, and let's keep in mind that this remains hockey, this remains low in the priority considering everything that's happening in the world. But at the same time, I would not blame anybody, and first and foremost us, to look towards sports to provide some entertainment, distraction, and something that provides maybe a welcome change to everything that's been thrown at our society in 2020 so far. So, yeah. Okay. So on this philosophical note, guys, thank you so much for being there. Thank you everybody for listening. We're going to be back next Friday with the French version of the Athletic Support, Le Super Athletic. In the meantime, we're going to keep producing a lot of content on our platform. So make sure to subscribe to The Athletic by going to theathletic.com, and you can have 40% off on the first year of your subscription by going to theathletic.com/athletic support. So for the friends of the podcast, you get 40% off. That's theathletic.com/athletic support. So a word to finish, guys.
I just want to point out to everyone that this is a long weekend coming up. Please enjoy the long weekend and treat it as such. And try to, in the limited ways that we can, I've made a point at my house to make sure there's a difference between the weekend and a weekday. I've done it with bacon, but it works. It feels like a weekend. So this is a long weekend. So I hope everyone has an excellent long weekend, you two included, to just take the breather and try and treat yourself to something this weekend. I hope you all have an excellent long weekend.
That's a really good thought, Arpin. I've just been really happy to spend an hour talking about something other than COVID-19, which is kind of nice. And I have adopted, or I should say we have adopted the Bacon Saturdays as well. And I think we're going to institute the long weekend. It's going to be the mimosa Sunday. I think probably Ooh. That's going to happen. Yeah.
That's good.
Yeah.
Oh, nice.
Getting all fancy. Wow.
That's very tempting. Fancy. Yeah.
Possibly the Aperol spritz. We'll see how it goes. It'll depend on what I can, get hold of, at my local SAQ, how long the line is.
Yeah, I would leave now if I were you. It's Friday.
That's a really good idea. Okay. That's nice talking with you, chaps. I have a lineup to join.
All right, everybody. Thank you so much for being there, and we'll see you next week. Bye-bye.